So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome, welcome. Do you know someone struggling with fertility, polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis, or the aftermath of having taken hormonal contraception? Well, you won't want to miss today's show. My guest will be Dr. Susan Caldwell. She specializes in treating underlying health conditions impacting fertility, overall health, and the aftermath of contraception. So stay tuned, buckle up. We'll be diving into some great health tips and guidelines for you or someone you know who might be struggling. If you want to join the conversation today, the number is 1-888-914-9149, or head over to my Instagram story where you can ask me a question anytime during the show. If you haven't heard, there's actually the possibility of another state here in the United States actually banning late-term abortion. And this is really, really good news. And since I've been pregnant, it's been interesting thinking about the abortion issue. And often people ask me, well, do you feel, you know, more aware of the issue than you did before? And I said, no, I understood the dismemberment of the child. I understand, however, what I continue to think more and more about is the fact that the woman is going through such a tremendous pain in her life by having that separation, that ending of a life, the killing of her baby. And that's what continues to be the theme behind much of what I see in this concern. In fact, I think about it just the other day, I was using some of those little baby buds that you put on your stomach so that you can make your child really, really smart, like by playing Beethoven and Bach. I mean, they're supposed to have incredible IQs, so I hear. I have been playing Nutcracker music for my kid, and she dances, okay? So I was playing music for her the other day, and she's moving around, and she's calm. She's usually a very active kid. Now, I forgot that I had my timer on my computer for my tasks, reminding me when to break, when to get up, move around, and so forth. Next thing you know, all of a sudden I hear this loud beeping at the same time as my stomach goes through a hurricane. My poor kid was startled half to death in utero. It was so sad. I felt bad, and it was also kind of funny all at the same time. Don't worry. The good news is we know her hearing works. Not only that, babies in the womb can take a lot of noise. But it started making me think about this recent proposition, Proposition 115, in the state of Colorado. A yes vote on Prop 115 would actually save countless babies and their mothers from the scar of abortion. You see, it would ban abortion after 22 weeks if passed. This is a time to step up. What an easy way to ban abortion. In fact, people care so much about this that over 150,000 Colorado voters signed petitions for this to be on the ballot this election. Why? For two reasons. One, most people don't support late-term abortion. And two, most people don't even know that late-term abortion is legal. And when they do, even if they support early abortion, they don't like the idea of late-term abortion. The fact that this isn't on the ballot in my state doesn't mean that I should be silent. Remember, one of the corporal works of mercy is to instruct the ignorant. And a lot of people don't know, again, that abortion is legal in that last trimester, or even in the second trimester toward the end of it. Number two, I want to encourage you to go over to my Instagram story. I posted a photo of my baby girl at 20 weeks in utero. You can see her feminine face, a beautiful 4D ultrasound. You can also see another ultrasound image in 2D where her hand is reaching up. You can see that little hand reaching out. That baby, my baby at the time, was 20 weeks. Her life wouldn't be protected by this abortion ban, which doesn't start until after 22 weeks. So put a face to children whose lives are priceless and could be saved. I wish this was on the ballot in my state. It's not. But children in another state can be saved today by you educating others about the fact that late-term abortion is allowed, about the fact that it harms a mother and a baby, and that they can actually do something about it. Earlier this week, I shared about how many women at the Women's March across the board, each one I spoke to, were in favor of late-term abortion, unfettered access to abortion. But that's not the majority of people. In fact, we saw back in 2019, as New York, Illinois, and even other states were pondering it, but those two did it, went ahead with and wrote into their state constitution that abortion should be legal through all 9 months of women's pregnancy. That's what Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton did back in 1972. But starting in the 90s, another Supreme Court case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey passed, which allowed for various restrictions to be put on abortion from state to state. Although a woman can still say, even if there's, say, a ban after a heartbeat or after 22 weeks, if she knows this, which is not as common, she can still say, well, this is an undue burden on me and I want an abortion. But the bottom line is, even if she goes for an abortion, she finds out it's not accessible because of some sort of ban in her state, many women choose life. In fact, there's an incredible study that came out this year called the Turnaway Study that actually looks, and it's a pro-abortion, comes from a pro-abortion stance, but it looks at the lives of tons of women over the course of 10 years who chose to keep their children because they were turned away. Because they were turned away from that abortion that they sought out. Whether because they were too far along and that abortion clinic didn't offer the abortion, they couldn't find another one in the near vicinity. Or because of a law just like this one that could be passed in a couple weeks here in Colorado that would literally change the course of many women's lives. Although raising a child could be difficult, many of those women, as time went on in the pregnancy and even up to the point of birth, ended up saying that they were glad they kept their child and that they didn't have that abortion. And so there's something you can do today to save the lives of children, their mothers, and ultimately families, which impacts the community, which impacts marriages, which impacts so many friendships and relationships that could be if we were willing to speak up. You're listening to Trending with Timory. My guest today is Dr. Susan Caldwell. We're going to dive into a couple really important topics. You remember last time, perhaps, that when she joined me, she shared her story about how she herself has children from in vitro fertilization, but she would never recommend it to anyone. Years later, she went on to become what's called a NAPRO doctor, helping treat women's underlying health issues surrounding fertility and the aftermath of contraception. Now, today we're going to talk about a couple of underlying health concerns that really do impact many women's fertility today. Polycystic ovarian syndrome and endometriosis. I think of pop sensation Julianne Hough. She's a dancer, movie star, and singer. She's known for America's Got Talent. She was on Dancing with the Stars. I think she was in that, the latest of the remakes of the Fame movie. You see, as a teenager, doctors ignored signs and concerns about heavy and painful periods. She says, I quote, "They all said that I was experiencing what was normal. Should I just thought, this is what it's like to be a woman. Everyone talked about bad cramps. I didn't realize at the time that mine were worse." She ended up finding out years later she had endometriosis. She had a difficult time conceiving, always wanted to be a mother from a young age. By 2018, she's married and she's dreaming of having children, and so she starts freezing her eggs. Then, when she can't conceive, with time, she ends up starting to do multiple rounds of in vitro fertilization. Her marriage fell to shambles. We're not talking about the topic of IVF today, which I'm going to link to the last podcast where Dr. Susan Caldwell shared her story. But what we are going to talk about is getting to the root cause, such as treating endometriosis and or polycystic ovarian syndrome. Dr. Susan Caldwell, thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to your sharing treatment options for endometriosis and success stories, if you could.
Hi, Temery.
It's good to hear your voice, Susan. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's dive in. What types of treatments are available for endometriosis that can work toward healing and better health and possibly even a means toward fertility rather than what much of the mainstream treatment is today?
Yeah, well, first, endometriosis has to be suspected, right? Based on a woman's symptoms. And those symptoms can be pain, unusual cysts on an ultrasound on the ovaries. They can have some unusual mucus or bleeding patterns on their Creighton chart or other charting system. But a huge sign is infertility. I just had a patient last week who ended up having surgery because she had infertility and didn't have cramps, and she really didn't have any of these other symptoms. So she ended up going to a NAPRO surgeon, which is the preferred treatment, is to go to a specialist, and I'll talk about that too. And they found she had extensive endometriosis when they did a laparoscopy, which is a type of surgery. So we have to be kind of thinking about endometriosis when we're dealing with women with those symptoms. And then when it is suspected, it's important that treatment begin soon so that fertility can be preserved. So the treatment that is recommended, that has been the most successful for my patients, is getting those patients to a fellowship trained endometriosis specialist surgeon. So this is not a basic OBGYN that you might find at any hospital. These are OBGYNs who have completed that residency and then have gone on to a specialized fellowship in endometriosis and infertility. So I'm in New Orleans. I usually refer to the NAPRO surgeons in Houston. And so these surgeons are taught to first recognize endometriosis, because it can really look differently in each woman. Sometimes it looks, you know, dark, like these dark little patches. Sometimes it's white. Sometimes it looks like a strange cyst on the ovary. So it's important that if a woman's going to have surgery, you know, surgery is risky. And anytime there's surgery, there's potential for, you know, complications. So you want to put that woman in the best hands, just like if she had cancer or something that was very serious, right. She deserves to see a specialist. And that's where the success rates have come from, honestly.
Right. Yeah. And Dr. Caldwell, wouldn't you say that this is often misdiagnosed, undertreated, so it goes on for years? And it's because women aren't being told that your underlying health problems concerning your cycle can't just be given contraception to fix it. That actually isn't the answer. And in some cases, with endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome, can actually make it worse.
Right, because you're just covering up the warning system. So you're just muting the alarm that the woman has. Her body is sounding an alarm saying, hey, you know, I'm in trouble here. I'm really having some pain. And you're just basically disarming that. It's almost like your smoke alarm was going off in your house, and instead of looking for the smoke and the fire, you just turned off the alarm and went back to sleep. Well, that's not the right treatment in either case. It's not the right response in either case, right? So it's so important we listen to these patients and that these patients be given a voice, to be taken seriously. Now, I will admit, I don't send a patient, you know, if she tells me she has bad cramps, I don't send her to the surgeon right away. I don't think that would be very prudent. We get her charting. We get her really in tune with her body. We might try some dietary changes. For example, dairy is a huge trigger of painful periods. So little things like that, we might get her progesterone checked. And sometimes when her hormones are lined up, things get better. So we try a lot of things. And if it looks like, you know, there's some really big red flags, and that I don't wait too long. So if a woman is having a pain during intercourse. That's very, you know, there's some history that we take with air to kind of get our, to get that history and understand it better. But generally pain during intercourse, pain during bowel movements, and then pain that would keep a woman from going to work or school. Those three things are kind of real red flags that we're going to, you know, have a kind of a low threshold to send her, to a surgeon if she has those symptoms.
Excellent. So if someone thinks that they might have polycystic ovarian syndrome, my first go-to would be recommending going to a NAPRO doctor, which we can pull a link up and post that on social media right now on my Twitter, which we'll do. But what other things would you recommend for kind of a first step for treatment or diagnosis?
For polycystic ovarian syndrome?
For endometriosis. Oh. Both, oh, really, though.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, and the most important thing is the diagnosis, or at least to have it on the radar and to have the proper, you know, history, physical exam. But endometriosis, like that's what I've kind of said so far, kind of geared towards endometriosis. Really, the most important thing I want people to hear is that every single woman is unique. Her symptoms are unique. She needs to be listened to. So for PCOS, that's just a general kind of umbrella term that can encompass many different symptoms. So there's different treatment depending on of the symptoms. So I've seen patients go to other doctors who are kind of treat everyone with PCOS the same. I've heard people say that, you know, they've walked into the doctor and because they had a normal weight, their doctor told them, oh, you couldn't have PCOS. So they don't really treat them for that. Mm-hmm. Or they just give everyone, oh, your periods are irregular. Let's, you know, give you birth control, which doesn't honor the woman's unique concern. In fact, that concern has not been investigated. Therefore, it can't be properly treated. If we don't know what her symptoms are, we don't know what the treatment is.
If we had the whole show, I would share more now, but some of you know that I myself have polycystic ovarian syndrome and have struggled significantly with various symptoms from PCOS and other health issues that also impact fertility. And so these things, such as putting all the pieces together, are so beneficial, whether you're married and you want to have children or if you're single. A question just came in from a listener asking, you know, what about someone who might be not be sexually active, who's a virgin. They're waiting for marriage, and perhaps they have two of those symptoms that are being mentioned with regard to endometriosis. Should they investigate if they have endometriosis or PCOS? I say absolutely, right? Yes. I mean, yes. I know it would have saved some pain in my own marriage if we had known sooner. I had a feeling, but I didn't officially get a diagnosis till after we were married.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because this is really about health. Our goal in every single case is the woman's wholeness and the woman's health, and her ability to become the best version of herself involves her health. So no matter, you know, what her vocation is, we do need to take these symptoms seriously and at least, you know, start charting and see someone who is knowledgeable in these restorative reproductive kind of methods like NAPRO.
Absolutely. Now, just really quick here, I want to touch on one other point, and that is there is hope. There are success stories of people whose fertility can be preserved with issue of endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome. Can you share just a little bit about that?
Yes. So infertility is a symptom of an underlying concern. And just so you know, PCOS and infertility, I'm sorry, and endometriosis go together very often in the same woman. So it's rare that a patient just has PCOS. She might have other things keeping her from being healthy. So again, we want to make sure we get to the root of it. So generally what I do and what I've seen, so let's say PCOS, for example. So people come to me with PCOS, that ends up being their diagnosis, and they have had maybe recurrent miscarriages. That's a huge one. And, you know, infertility and these long cycles, and they're having trouble getting pregnant or staying pregnant. And I find the most successful treatment comes with giving progesterone. Progesterone mm-hmm. is that hormone that helps the lining of the uterus be receptive to the embryo at the second half of the cycle. So, you know, I'm thinking of like a handful of patients who really just with some progesterone to help those cycles to become regular, and we've normalized that luteal phase. Yeah,
so
like
helpful.
I have a bulletin board full of pictures of babies, and it's just so rewarding and encouraging. So yes, there's hope.
Praise God. And those babies might not be here had those women not received the care of a Napro doctor, a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome or endometriosis. I'll be right back with Dr. Susan Caldwell, and we'll dive into the aftermath of contraception, how you can regain your health and your fertility, and what the impact is.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. Napro doctor Dr. Susan Caldwell is with me, and we're going to discuss in a moment the impact of contraception on marriages and relationships and the aftermath of finding that healing and balance again in your life. But perhaps you were just listening to this last segment where we talked about treatment and success stories for people who have experienced a polycystic ovarian syndrome and endometriosis. That's my story. Napro doctor was a part of my journey to conceiving at a time when fertility was really difficult for me. Now, maybe you're listening and you're a guy. And you're thinking, I'm changing the station. I'm not going to listen. Let me tell you this. I've known about Napro doctors. I saw as a little girl when my mom would help people who are struggling with infertility just by sharing the information of a Napro doctor and the fertility care practitioners. And women who struggled for years to conceive were able to conceive. I have another friend, a friend John Girardi. He's been on the show with me before. He has a dear friend that happened to come up at one point. They were married for 10 years, and his friend shared that they were struggling with fertility. And John goes, hey, you need to go see a Napro doctor. After a 10-year battle of infertility, within 6 months, I believe they had conceived. Within a few months of having had a surgery, because I think there may have been some type of endometriosis. That's just one guy speaking up and saying something to his friend who happened to mention something about his and his wife's infertility struggle. So men, you can make a big difference by being equipped with this information that might make you a tad squirmy, but could actually help save a marriage and help for there to be new babies and marriages that otherwise might not have them. You're listening to Trending with Timory. My guest today is Dr. Susan Caldwell, and I'd love to talk to you, Dr. Caldwell, both on a personal and from a clinician's perspective about contraception. If you'd be willing to share a little bit, I know contraception that was something that impacted you both as a doctor after having prescribed it for years, but also in your marriage. Could you share a little bit?
Yeah, so you don't know what you don't know. You know, I was really clueless about all matters relating to contraception. You know, like most probably people today, they think contraception is this harmless way to kind of take charge of your life. And it isn't harmless. It has major effects, negative effects on a woman's health, but also her body. I think the thing that contraception does is it gives us this false sense of control over life. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt like I was in charge. You know, I didn't have a relationship with God, and I thought that it was my job to control my life and to control my fertility. And so that never ends well. And also in personally, and I see it in a lot of people, it fosters some selfishness. Contraception fosters selfishness. St. John Paul II reminded us that we are here to be a gift, right, to another, to make a self-gift, right, especially in marriage. And what contraception says is, I don't want to be a gift. I want to take for myself. So that looks like It fosters, and it in my own marriage, you know, fostered a lot of just lust. You know, when a woman takes something like contraception to make herself infertile, it sends a signal to a man that she's kind of sexually available all the time. And then pleasure becomes the dominant reason why you would engage in the marital act, which is really a little upside down. And then a woman, in my case, and in many women that I've talked to, begin to feel used and begin to feel like they need to protect themselves. And it's really unhealthy. And then women can also, I mean, not men aren't the only ones, right? I mean, because we kind of allow that type of behavior. And so it's the selfishness that really wounds the relationship and really wounds intimacy. And I see that a lot, and it's really heartbreaking.
That's Dr. Susan Caldwell. She's a Napro doctor specializing working with women who have struggled with infertility or maybe the aftermath of contraception use. Can you share, Dr. Caldwell, a little bit about the clinical perspective of women who have experienced mm-hmm. using contraception and how they might have struggled to regain their health after or even their fertility?
Yes. So if we just think for a moment what contraception does. It disables the communication system between the brain and the ovaries. It kind of takes the brain and ovaries out of communication with each other. So you're sending a signal to those vital organs that, hey, we don't want you to work, right? It's the only place in medicine where we give someone who's healthy something to intentionally disable a part of the body from working properly. So this is really an insane concept that we are allowing as women and couples to allow this to be done to us. So you can imagine when you continue every day, every month, every year to give your body the signal, don't work, brain and ovaries, like we don't want y'all communicating, then eventually that becomes the status quo. So for many women, when their cycles are not regular, meaning they're not ovulating normally because they're taking this pill or other hormonal contraception, we see this have an effect on the lining of the uterus most importantly, because that lining should be practicing every month, growing, thickening, shedding, and it simply doesn't happen when progesterone isn't being made naturally. So then what we see is couples who come in, and women don't have regular periods sometimes after the pill, but then I think one of the most tragic things is they have miscarriages because mm-hmm. that lining is not properly built every month and shed. And so that lining is really, these women often need a lot of progesterone support in pregnancy. Once they do get pregnant, they need a lot of help to get pregnant with progesterone and some natural, you know, methods like we offer. But then once they get pregnant, they need a lot of progesterone in pregnancy to continue to have this healthy pregnancy. So that's just sad because our body should know how to do that already. You know, we shouldn't have to suffer all of these consequences that often women aren't told. They could suffer this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think Dr. Caldwell, that's Dr. Susan Caldwell, Napro doctor, joining me here on Trending with Timory. I've never taken birth control, but I had polycystic ovarian syndrome. My body does not produce adequate amounts of progesterone. I needed it in order to help me conceive a child, and I've needed it throughout my entire pregnancy, and we've had to monitor that dose the whole time. And it's been challenging because my body on its own just doesn't create it. So if you add an underlying health problem such as endometriosis or polycystic ovarian syndrome onto hormonal contraception use for years, it's making it extremely difficult for that woman who eventually wants a child to conceive.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So share a little bit more about how you regained that health after having used the hormonal contraception.
Well, I never saw a Napro doctor. So my youngest was about maybe about six by the time I kind of learned this information and started charting. And I never really went to a Napro doctor. I never got a full evaluation. and I never conceived naturally again after that. So I went to a traditional OBGYN to have surgery at the beginning of our infertility journey. And I know that that surgery wasn't a complete surgery. It wasn't an excisional surgery. It was a traditional kind of ablation that they do. And my symptoms were back within a couple of months. So mm-hmm. I didn't have the proper treatment. But thanks be to God, like, you know, NAPRO gives me the ability to help so many women who can restore their fertility when it's done at the proper time. So many women learn about this when they're very late in their age, and sometimes they're no longer, you know, naturally fertile because of impending menopause. But but there's always hope. There's always hope. Even women who are approaching menopause, we can help them, you know, just restore, you know, their sleep and their hormone balance, and we can help them, you know, no matter where they are.
How about young women who are struggling with this? They want to conceive, maybe they're mm-hmm. in that state of marriage or not quite yet, and they want to regain that health after years of contraception use. What would rebalancing those hormones and that health look like with a NAPRO doctor?
Yeah, well, they would definitely want to start charting and then come in. And again, sometimes we find multiple issues related to stress, maybe under eating. We will find thyroid issues they didn't know they had. Find vitamin. Vitamin deficiency. We do not stop. It's this relentless search to make this woman whole. And then, you know, when we attend to those kinds of things, not only is she feeling great, she's able to take care of her kids, she's able to be present to her husband and her work or her family, you know, whatever she's got going on. And then she can conceive naturally. She doesn't need to go to have these, you know, technologies, very expensive, very invasive things. Because, you know, at the end of the IVF journey that I took, I wasn't any healthier. I just had three babies to take care of, and no one helped me to get to the root of, you know, what was really going on.
Yeah. And so then caring for those children was difficult from a health perspective as well.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Caldwell, it has been an absolute joy to have you here with us. You're practicing NAPRO technology there in New Orleans, along with other NAPRO doctors around the world, across the country. And so we posted links on my Twitter if you are interested, any age, in learning more about your gynecological health. Whether you want to conceive, whether you're not there yet, but you want to make sure you're healthy, or maybe you're toward those years where your hormones are just off from contraception use or the way we eat, you name it, this is the place for you. We've posted resources. Dr. Susan Caldwell will be back in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions for her in the meantime, let me know. We'll take it up next time she's here on Trending. I'll be back in just a little bit to talk about Vice President Joe Biden and something he said about 8 and 10-year-olds and being able to identify as whatever they want. I'll be right back.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. I'm going to share with you some comments by Vice President Joe Biden about 8-year-olds and identifying as transgender. You need to know this, whether you're a parent or just someone in the culture concerned about the well-being of children. But before I talk about that, Louise from Austin is on line one here. And Louise, welcome to the show. You have a question about birth control and its impact on babies. Please do share.
Yes, thank you. My question is, you know, the birth control pills are an overabundant amount of female hormones. And if a mother gets pregnant and the baby is, say, a boy or a girl, does that overabundant hormones in the mother cause some kind of hormonal thing in the children that they are growing up with a sexual disorientation or sexual confusion? Gender confusion.
Mm, Absolutely. Great question, Louise. Thank you for asking that. So can a child be impacted by the mother having taken hormonal birth control before or even during her pregnant or before or even while conceiving? Because let me tell you this, a lot of women do still actually conceive children while on contraception. It's not always taken correctly. And so sometimes children do still come about. That's why we have abortion, the fail-safe of contraception. But let me address a couple really important things in this question. So there was a study done by the University of Colorado's Integrated Physiology Department. And what they did is they studied the water in Boulder, Colorado. What they saw is that there were trace amounts of contraception in the water supply there in Colorado. Now, the trace amounts were from what? From women who have been taking hormonal contraception and from the waste, right, from using the restroom that has now gone into our water supply. And so there's this huge concern about there being an increase in hormones in our water that we drink and the water that we swim in and so on. And so what was shown in that study that came out of the University of Colorado were a few shocking things. Number one, we saw that this actually impacted the fertility of the subsequent fish in Boulder, Colorado. So let's say one fish was exposed to the hormonal contraception and then proceeded to perhaps have other fish. What ended up happening is that there was increased cases of infertility within the fish. There were increased issues with eggs within the fish, whether or not they were present or the quality was good. But then also there was this increase in hermaphrodite fish. Fish that you couldn't tell were male or female and so forth. And so a lot of these studies have been done in relation to the human person. Is our use and confusion of hormones while the baby's in utero and being conceived impacted? And actually the answer is yes. When a female child in particular is conceived, that female child's hormonal makeup can, the hormonal makeup in the womb can impact the quality and quantity of eggs. Did you know that a baby is born with a quantity of eggs that it will have for life? Did you know that? And this is why health while you're pregnant is so important. Why contraception has a generational impact. You know, we often talk about generational sin as Catholics and how one person's decision can trickle into many family members down the line of that family. Well, so can our health consequences as well. And contraception's one of them. And there are clear links between this confusion about gender identity and sexuality with an imbalance with regard to hormones. There are also links to various types of anxiety medication that was taken very commonly back in the 60s, or even diet pills that were taken during pregnancy back in the 60s and so forth, that also impact children in utero and their hormonal makeup. And there are links showing this tendency at times where some of these people who were conceived with or even in utero with these hormones present, they actually have shown, for example, in the men, increased effeminacy in their behavior and their body type at times. And among women, it's impacted their fertility as well. And so this is a great question. It's something for us to consider and understand that when the church talks about contraception, it was very wise in understanding that hormonal contraception would confuse the identity of male and female. It would confuse sexuality. It would lead to the objectification of women, the lost identity for men, but it would ultimately lead to this overall confusion about who am I as a human person? Is it any surprise 60 years after contraception became widespread that now we don't even know what sex is for? We also have a difficult time understanding the differences between men and women because we've tried to mark that out, blotted out with hormonal contraception and abortion. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. I shared with you that Vice President Joe Biden made some comments about transgenderism recently. Listen to this. It's from an ABC News hosted town hall last week that I've been meaning to cover, and I'm finally getting to it. Listen to his comments.
The idea that an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child decides, you know, I decided I want to be transgender. That's what I think I'd like to be. It may make my life a lot easier. There should be zero discrimination.
What? An 8-year-old child should be able to decide they're transgender? Well, just like an abortion doesn't poof happen out of nowhere when you suddenly want to have an abortion, nor in 2020 does a child just suddenly identify as trans with no consequences. What does it look like to identify as transgender in 2020, even for an 8-year-old? Here's how it starts. Hormone replacement therapy, yes, for an 8-year-old. That also includes puberty-blocking hormones, meaning that that child will never go through puberty and properly develop, which also impacts the brain development and can also lead to cancer. 3, this introduction into transgenderism ends up leading to grooming within the public school system and among peers. Grooming into ultimately the arms of pedophiles. That's the bottom line. Whether you like to hear that or not, it's true. Now, ultimately, as years go on, it could lead to sex changes, including top surgery and or bottom surgery, depending on if you're a male or a female and what you want. Now, this is even being done with children. And let me tell you this, if it's done with a child, these physical surgeries, they cannot be reversed. You might be able to do a reconstructive surgery if someone changes their mind, but the proper function of the body is not restored. Not only that, if you do a sex change on a child, it has to be redone because they grow and there's limited skin present, and the damage and the stretching and the manipulation of the skin is awful. Some of whom, if they change their mind or depending on what's going on, can't even use the restroom normally. Obviously, if we're changing their sexual organs. So here are the real problems. Number one, we should not place an identity on any person that's strictly reduced to their sexual interactions with other people, whether we're adults or children, especially children. Number two, I mentioned it earlier, grooming into adult exploitive relationships only further objectifies a child who might be struggling with objectifying itself, saying, I don't know what I am. Am I just a boy? Am I just a girl? Well, you're either a boy or a girl, but you're also so much more than that. You're created with a purpose in the eyes of the beholder. You're created as someone who's loved unconditionally. Third, many of the hormonal replacement therapy, puberty blockers, and sex changes are irreversible. We might be able to simulate old body parts, but you will not regain proper function, including having children, especially for girls when they become women. There's number four, there's a lack of full knowledge of the long-term consequences. We know much is irreversible. We know that cancer is a part of hormone replacement therapy often. We know a lot of intricate pieces, even from the psychological perspective, but we do not have full knowledge of the long-term impact. And I'm sorry, but Vice President Biden, why on earth would you want to do a science experiment on an 8-year-old child when you don't even know the full consequences? And fifth, this fails to help the big picture of both adults and children, but let's just stick with children here. Often when transgender identity is present, many of our psychologists have made it very clear that there are other underlying mental health concerns. And what happens is the culture hones in just on the transgenderism. What does that do? It prevents the underlying mental health concerns from being treated, and it can actually exacerbate some of those underlying health issues. So no, I'm sorry, Vice President Biden, it's not discrimination, as you say, to say that an 8-year-old shouldn't receive hormone replacement therapy, a sex change, or even be encouraged in identifying as a gender that the child is not. Stop playing transgender politics on the bodies of children. It's not okay. It's a mutilation, and it's hurting them. It's not helping them. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I was thinking about today's saint, Saint John of Capistrano. There's actually a mission named after him here in Southern California. And as I was looking at a little bit of his story, I was thinking about the times that he lived in and how relatable it is to what we're experiencing today. He lived during the bubonic plague, where people still could coexist with one another, even in the face of illness. It's a reminder for us that we're still called to see the person before us and be honest about the reality of death, but still focus on putting our soul in order for eternal life and preparing for death. This is why I so often recommend that book by one of my favorite saints, Saint Alphonsus Liguori. It's titled Preparation for Death. And talk about a good kick in the pants. This is one we all could use. I've read it multiple times and pick it up from time to time when I need to be reminded to keep a life in its proper context before my Heavenly Father. Not only did Saint John of Capistrano live during the bubonic plague, but he also lived during a time where there were 2 to 3 claims on the papacy. That's up to 3 possible popes. Imagine sorting that out. It's relevant today because in light of this week's confusion and many other confusions over the last number of years about what is or isn't said about various moral issues such as civil marriage for same-sex couples, we stand at a time where we need to know truth. Just like the people during the life of St. John of Capistrano also were hungry for truth. And so when I look at this, it's important for us to remember that even the place of uncertainty surrounding a plague or the confusion with a church and its leadership, there can still be saints that are produced. St. John of Capistrano is one. James of the Marches and many others, St. Bernardine of Siena, lived at the same time. The church can still produce saints. Why? Because the gospel message is the same. It's the same church, even if the leadership is confused and not teaching what the church teaches. It's the same magisterium that, if you didn't know, the magisterium, the church, is made up of 2 dimensions, sacred scripture and tradition. Do you know what it is so that when there are confusing things that are said by a friend or even sometimes our religious leadership, you can actually say, no, I know what the church teaches. If you're still confused about the comments on civil marriages for same-sex couples, we're posting a link to that podcast where I explain exactly what the church teaches on the topic. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to seeing you for our happy hour on Monday.